greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and there's definitely much more news than I could possibly ever get to, and I've managed to tear myself away from the World Cup finale. That's right, the World Cup finale was taking place. I tore myself away after 100 minutes. There had been no score. I'm serious. The World Cup, Europeans, I don't know who's playing in it, but I'm sure it's a number of Europeans or South Americans sitting for 100 minutes without any scoring. And at that point, well, the excitement was just too much, and I decided I'd better just stop, tear myself away, and do the program. So welcome back, everybody. So much stuff. I'm going to have to move very quickly. You're going to have to listen very quickly today because there is a lot of news. But I want to start out with a report from the McBurney compound here. In the suburbs of the Denver metropolitan area. Just a word of advice. If you have a deck and you plan to paint your deck, well, my first bit of advice would be, if at all possible, hire someone else to do it. That would be my first bit of advice. But if you're like if you're like us here at the McBurney compound, still in the throes of the Obama recovery, and you can't quite scrape together the money to hire a reliable contractor to paint your deck, my second bit of advice would be, find something for your young children to do besides helping you paint the deck. I've got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. She's 14 months. And they insisted they wanted to help Daddy paint the deck. And I was moving along pretty quickly. Although I must admit, I'm glad I wasn't a professional who bid this job, because I would have bid it at, you know, a couple of days. And it's going to easily take 2 weeks. But the young children, when the 3-year-old and the 14-month-old, once you get them in a position where they can actually do some good with a paintbrush in their hand, well, you're going to find yourself distracted and interrupted, having every 2 to 3 minutes verifying a spider sighting or some other type of insect or wild creature that they've spotted, cleaning various body parts that have been dipped in the paint bucket. That's the 14-month-old. And I must say that the young kids, they lose interest rather quickly. Before they can do much good at all, they generally wander about, and they're off doing something else. And their paintbrush is laying on the deck, getting stiff and dry. And well, so that's my advice. If you have a project like that, come up. But I've got to say that even after just a few days of mild physical labor, I'm under 200 pounds for the first time in how long? A couple years? 2 years?
Well, you're 7 feet, so it's okay.
That's right, but I'm 7 feet tall. No, this morning I was at 198.6. Ooh. Under 200 pounds for the first time in a long time, so very happy about that. All right, so I've got to get to the show because I know you need some conservative talk. I know you need it because I listened to conservative radio this week, and between Rush Limbaugh telling jokes about blind prostitutes and Glenn Beck doing an entire segment on his program about Margaret Sanger without mentioning abortion as her tool to wipe out the so-called undesirable classes, I'm just not sure there's anyone left on the radio who actually gives it to you straight. So I know you need me. I mean, I know there's one fella here in Denver, Bob Enyart, on the radio. He's the only one I can think of off the top of my head who actually gives it to you straight, from a Christian perspective. And so I know you need me, and so let's jump right in. A story of the utmost import that I want to get right to. From Atlanta, Georgia, the Associated Press, a 75-year-old woman drove her car through the front of an Atlanta liquor store last Monday. Constance Chapman, did I say she was 75? She's 75 years old. She told the police her brakes went out as she approached the entrance of the liquor store. She crashed through the front window, pinning a worker between the window and her car and a shelf. The worker, one Janitha Gardner, was taken to Atlanta Medical Center, and she was treated for a head injury caused by a falling bottle of liquor. Yeah. Now, this is the second time 75-year-old Constance Chapman has crashed her car through the same liquor store.
Oh, my God.
This is the second time that this particular liquor store has been invaded by Constance. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that it's a Toyota Camry, right? Or is that all? Is that pretty much over, the whole Toyota scare? Is that over? Anyway, it was a Mazda Miata. First of all, if you're a 75-year-old woman, you're driving a Mazda Miata to a liquor store, you probably have other issues besides just brake problems. Anyway, the sad part of the story, authorities said the wreck shattered 1,500 bottles of perfectly good liquor. All right, so now let's move on to the war. I want to jump right in. It's a good news, bad news thing with the war, as it usually is. We're going to start with the good news from the war front. From the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom, American scientists have developed artificial blood that could soon be used to treat wounded soldiers in battle. Listen to this. This is amazing. The genetically engineered blood is created by taking cells from umbilical cords, and using a machine to mimic the way bone marrow works to produce mass quantities of usable red blood cells. It's known as blood farming. With a PH, blood farming. Okay. You know, like that band Fish. This is blood farming, but this is good for society. Whereas Fish is a net loser. Blood farming. It's amazing. It is amazing the intelligence and the creativity that God placed in the minds of men, and the resources He's given us in our environment is simply spectacular to observe. One umbilical cord from one baby can be turned into about 20 units of usable blood. So there it is, folks. Artificial blood. I mean, I did the flying car last week. We've got the artificial blood this week. I mean, it's just amazing. Praise the Lord. It's phenomenal. The world that He's given us. All right, some more good news. From the war, a dateline of Aspen, Colorado, from the Washington Times, the United Arab Emirates ambassador to the United States said last Tuesday that the benefits of bombing Iran's nuclear program outweigh the short-term costs such an attack would impose. Mr. Yusuf Al-Otaiba, he says, "I think it's a cost-benefit analysis. There will be consequences. There will be problems. There will be people protesting. There will be rioting. They will be very unhappy that there is an outside force attacking a Muslim country. This is going to happen no matter what. But if you are asking me, I am willing to live with that versus living with a nuclear Iran. We cannot live with a nuclear Iran. I am willing to absorb what it takes, whatever it takes, and whatever takes place at the expense of the security of the United Arab Emirates. Thank you very much." What do you mean we can't ski? Because it's July. It's Aspen, Colorado. How often do I get to come to Aspen, Colorado? Can we at least go look at some bears? Are there moose or anything? All right, let's just pack everything up and get ready, and we'll go bomb Iran.
Where?
Aspen, Colorado. Oh, they're at the, by the way, the meeting took place at the Ideas Conference in Aspen, Colorado, where there's not a lot of skiing going on. And this fellow's from the United Arab Emirates. Which is, well, Mr. Altaiba's comments, by the way, according to the Washington Times, echo those of some Arab diplomats who've said similar things in private. Mr. Otaiba is the first Muslim to come out publicly and say, yes, we need to bomb Iran. Now, Representative Jane Harman of Colorado, she told the Washington Times, "I've never heard an Arab government official say that before. He was stunningly candid," which shocked Jane Harman of California, because in America, there's no such thing as being candid in the political world. So she was stunned, almost to the point where she couldn't comment. But of course, she did flap her gums and comment. And I think she's a Republican, Actually, I'm not sure. I know she's in the Congress, and so she's of the lowest, lowest esteem. Now, John Bolton, he says Arab leaders regard a preemptive strike on Iran as, quote, the only alternative, unquote. So they're the greatest minds in politics and international relations are finally catching up with your humble host here at the Weekly Worldview, and we thank goodness that they finally are. All right, so that was the good news from the war. This is the shaky news. This is from the Wall Street Journal. The federal government is launching an expansive program dubbed Perfect Citizen to detect cyber assaults on private companies and government agencies running such critical infrastructure as the electricity grid and nuclear power plants. The surveillance by the National Security Agency would rely on a set of sensors deployed in computer networks and would be triggered by unusual activity, suggesting an impending cyber attack. So basically, it's the kill switch. It's the kill switch. They're going to detect cyber assaults, and then they're going to try to. The government will be able to go in and shut down networks in order to prevent the spread of some horrible virus. And on its face, it's a good idea. But you just gotta hope Barry Ho isn't the Manchurian candidate. You know what I'm saying? And you give him you give him and his ilk and his regime, as it's so popularly called these days, to give the Barry Ho regime the capability to start shutting down networks and power grids. Well, it just makes me nervous, okay? That's all. Just makes me nervous. And yeah, you can call me a conspiracy type. But I just don't trust the guy, okay? I don't trust him. And I know you don't either. So let's just move on. Let's not be terrified that we're going to wake up without water and electricity because Barry Ho has finally figured out a way to collapse the system. Let's move on to the United Nations. And again, from our good friends at the Associated Press, the UN Security Council last Friday condemned a deadly attack on a South Korean warship that killed 46 sailors. You remember that? The sinking of the North Korean vessel, the Chonan, back on March 26th. North Korea's UN ambassador, Shin Sun-ho, making his second appearance on the Weekly World View, Shin Sun-ho, he called the condemnation, the UN condemnation, he called it, quote, our greatest diplomatic victory, unquote. I'm sorry, our great diplomatic victory. You know, over there they have great leaders, they have dear leaders, they have great diplomatic victories. Why, you say, is Shin Sun-ho calling the uncondemnation of North Korea's attack on the South Korean vessel and the sinking of that vessel, why would he call their condemnation a great diplomatic victory? Well, the statement, the unstatement that was unread by the UN-Council president condemns the attack and calls for, quote, appropriate and peaceful measures to be taken against those responsible, unquote. But the statement doesn't identify who is responsible. So they condemn the attacking and the sinking of the South Korean vessel, but they never name the North Koreans. But they do say that we need appropriate and peaceful measures to be taken against those responsible. But they never identify who those are. And this is classic unspeak. Over at the UN, where they're incapable, they're ineffective, and their UN leadership is a beacon to the world. All right, one more from the war file before we move on. From New York City, this is from WorldNet Daily, New Yorkers apparently are very upset at the prospects that there are three new mosques going to be built in New York. That's right, three new mosques going to be built in New York. From WorldNet Daily, three separate plans to build Muslim worship centers in New York City have ignited protests by local residents and anti-jihad activists and prompting charges of Islamophobia and bigotry. Yes, a recent poll of New Yorkers on the most contentious of the three projects involving a Muslim center just two blocks from the site of the September 11th attacks shows residents there in New York are stoutly opposed to building mosques there in New York City. By the way, just as a side note, one of the mosques going to be built out on Staten Island, not as controversial, obviously, as the one going to be built near Ground Zero, but the property of the proposed mosque on Staten Island, according to WorldNet Daily, was owned by St. Margaret Catholic Church until the reverend there decided to sell the vacant convent to the Muslim American Society in May. So to me, this is expressive of the problem that you have, New Yorkers. New Yorkers, especially those of you in the city and on Long Island, you abandoned Christianity some time ago. You totally abandoned it. And now you're upset that Islam is coming in and filling the religious void that you have visited upon yourselves and your children there in the city. And you're all upset about it now. Well, maybe this will wake New Yorkers up and perhaps they'll turn back to true religion out of a fear of being overtaken by Muslims. Do you think that could happen in New York? I'm not so sure because if I remember correctly, September 11th didn't wake them up. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back as we exit the war file and we jump into the domestic tranquility / justice file. Again, it's a good news, bad news situation. And the good news just isn't all that good, frankly. Let's go to Louisiana, Missouri. This is from the newspaper out there in Hannibal, Missouri. 4-year-old Alyssa Meyer was returned home. And there was a huge welcome from family and friends after the young girl was abducted last Monday evening. If you followed this story, and I did, I remember I stayed up late one night like an idiot, staying up watching this story, terrified, because I have 3 little girls, and this is a 4-year-old girl. She was abducted, basically playing in her front yard with her little brother, and a car came by, and literally someone jumped out of the car, grabbed the girl, threw her in, and took off. I mean, I'm having a heart attack just hearing about this. Anyway, the girl was not hurt, even though the man authorities say was suspected of taking her was a registered sex offender. Abducted as she played in the yard with her 6-year-old brother. Now, the police, they found the girl, and as they were closing in on the 38-year-old registered sex offender suspect at his home, he shot himself in the head and has subsequently died and gone on to his just reward. What struck me about this story and the reason I couldn't turn off Nancy Grace, which, I mean, that's saying something right there. The fact that I'm watching Nancy Grace. I mean, that just doesn't happen very often. But I'm skimming through the channels. Let me paint a picture for you. I'm skimming through the channels and I come and a map is on the screen. And there's a little blue dot, and it's surrounded by red dots. You know, it reminded me of a battle map that you'd see. And I'm always a sucker for war stories on TV, documentaries and whatnot. I'll always stop and at least check them out. So I see this map, and after I stop for a second, it dawns on me. The blue dot says girl's home, and there are 19 red dots surrounding it. And each one of those dots is labeled offender. Offender, 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 offender. This is in Louisiana, Missouri. This is not the Castro District of San Francisco. This isn't the East Village. This is Louisiana, Missouri. I never even heard of it. It's so small. Little town along the Missouri River. This little girl's house was surrounded by 19 registered sex offenders. And those are just the ones that we've caught at least once and done the catch and release program on. We don't know how many deviant perverts who are consumed by an appetite for pornography and lust are actually living around our children, this girl in particular. So maybe this belongs in the war file. Maybe I think it does. You know, on the Weekly Worldview, we don't always just talk about the war at hand in the various theaters, but often we talk about the long war, the battle between good and evil, the battle between Satan and the living God, the battle between those who follow God and those who rebel against him. And this probably belongs in the war file. Anyway, the girl was returned home safely, not even injured as far as we know, which is it's a miracle. No, what did Nancy Grace say? There is a God. There is a God. That was how Nancy opened the show after the show I saw. Anyway, folks, they got us surrounded, okay? Our tolerance for deviance has led us to the point where we're surrounded by the enemy, and our children are at risk. I want to live in America where I can let my little girls play in the front yard and not have to sit it looking out through the window with a pistol, okay? I'm not saying I do that all the time. I'm saying I'd rather not have to feel like I need to do that. But but because of our own tolerance and our own rebellion as Americans, as families, as Christians in particular, they've got us surrounded, folks. Let's move on into the domestic tranquility file from Kaiser, Missouri, a small town so small that people in Louisiana, Missouri have never heard of it. It's about 150 miles southwest of Louisiana, Missouri. Kaiser, Missouri, a 12-year-old Missouri boy has been charged in juvenile court with two counts of first-degree murder in the shooting deaths of his mother and stepfather. A hearing will be held later in the month to determine whether the boy will be tried as an adult or a juvenile. Police found the parents' bodies last Monday night in a mobile home park in the small town of Kaiser, Missouri. That's all. Just another day in small-town America. Let's move on to the justice file from Los Angeles, California, from the Associated Press. A man suspected of killing 10 people and stumping detectives for more than two decades was finally arrested last Wednesday after police used DNA to track him down. This interesting the way they caught one Lonnie Franklin Jr., who's been charged, by the way, with 10 counts of murder, and, according to the Associated Press, could be eligible for the death penalty. Maybe if he'd killed an even dozen, he would be certainly eligible. But no, he killed 10 that we know of, and that could make him eligible, depending on if, you know, what kind of day the prosecutor's having, if they feel like making a deal, if they've got a big golf outing plan and they'd like to save some time and paperwork, perhaps they'll cut a deal with Lonnie Franklin Jr. and the 10 people that he butchered will be basically swept under the rug, so to speak. Well, we'll see what happens in that. The interesting part of this story that caught my eye, the break in the case came after Franklin's son was arrested on a completely unrelated crime, and he was swabbed for DNA. As everyone arrested in Los Angeles now gets swabbed for DNA, and that goes in the DNA registry. And then a computer automatically tries to match him to any other crimes. It's awesome. I think it's wonderful. It's great. Well, this kid is swabbed for DNA, and using a controversial technique, controversial according to the Associated Press, not to your host, a controversial technique known as familial DNA search, the sample came back as similar to evidence in the 10 serial killings that the police have been trying to figure out for almost 30 years. Well, detectives later swabbed a cup used by Lonnie Franklin Jr. at a restaurant and confirmed that his DNA matched the DNA in the serial killings. Wow. Isn't it amazing the amount of information that God put in us and made us able to figure out? With DNA, we have the ability to terrify criminals if it's used properly. If everyone knows that everyone's DNA is on file, and if you use if criminals know that if they leave a speck of spit or bodily fluids anywhere, that they're busted, you could terrorize and terrify criminals into at least acting like decent citizens and not acting out on their criminal passions and desires. Will we do that? Well, someday we will. When I'm in charge. By the way, one Lonnie Franklin Jr., serial murderer, has about 15 arrests over the past two decades for various crimes from burglary to assault, various restraining orders, in and out of the justice system, caught and released, caught and released. It turns out he butchered at least 10 people. And he's finally been caught. We're thankful that he has been caught, and we want to encourage the governing officials in Los Angeles and everywhere else to just start a DNA database and require every single person who enters our nation, whether via the birth canal or a visitor via an airplane or a boat, they have to register their DNA. All right. Let's more from the Domestic Tranquility File. Beautiful Los Angeles, California. Police are still looking for a gunman who opened fire at a July 4th celebration near downtown L.A. A 14-year-old girl was shot and killed. The suspect was apparently aiming at rival gang members when he opened fire on a group of kids watching fireworks. And Daisy Garcia was shot in the upper torso, and she died at a hospital. A short time later, there is a $50,000 reward. What is the life of a young girl in Los Angeles worth? Is it worth $50,000? Is it worth a national DNA database registering all people so that this particular punk gangsta would have been too afraid to fire a shot, too afraid to commit a crime? Because, and of course, you need a swift and painful death penalty coupled with a means of identifying criminals beyond any reasonable doubt. And we have the means right at our fingertips. We've got the flying car, we've got the artificial blood, but we can't figure out a way to rein in the criminal passions of our post-Christian culture. They've got us surrounded, for crying out loud. You know what I think it is? I really think that, well, I'll tell you what, we'll get to it later when there's a better segue, I think. I think it has to do with moral capital. You know, a nation or a people, even a person and a family, are invested with a certain amount of moral capital. And you expend that moral capital throughout your life as you fail and as you rebel against God and as you hurt people around you, as you disappoint people, and as you let people down. I will come back to that because I want to move on into, well, I want to finish the Domestic Tranquility File. This is Dateline Monk's Corner, South Carolina, a long way from New York City. A man and his girlfriend were charged last Thursday in the death of a toddler whose remains were found buried under 400 pounds of concrete in a trash can. The couple had concocted a story about the child falling into a river. Not true. They killed their child. Roger Williams and Grace Nicole Trotman were charged with homicide of their own son. The killing of their own child. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. Robert Edward Terrell Jr. This is the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Robert Edward Terrell Jr. faces aggravated assault and false imprisonment following a June 30th incident involving his mom. Police say that Robert Edward Terrell Jr. wanted his mother to do some ironing of his clothes, and when she said no, they got into an argument. Well, the 20-something man-child who lives with his mom and dad then pulled a gun on his mom and took the 51-year-old mother hostage, took her keys, took her cell phone, and refused to let her leave the house for about 6 hours because she wouldn't iron his clothes. Well, at least that was the trigger. The mother, who was later able to get out of the home and drive to a police station, reported the incident to police, and deputies went to the home. And Terrell surrendered. According to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Terrell surrendered without incident. And I would just say, I believe there was an incident. I believe we've got a 20-something slacker loser, punk bum, product of the public schools, holding his mother hostage at gunpoint over an argument about ironing clothes. To me, that's an incident. So let's just say on the worldview that Terrell surrendered with significant incident, for which he should be executed swiftly. No, that's the thing, you see. It might just stop him. Yes, that's right. I know, you're shocked that I would posit the idea that kidnapping should be a death penalty offense, but it is a death penalty offense. And this punk is already on the highway to hell. The death penalty might be the only thing that stops him. Let me hear some guitar. Oh, did I already miss the solo? Oh, yeah? No, I think I missed the solo. I'm a little rusty. Nope, all we're going to get is the loop that's going through Robert Edward Terrell's head. Anyway, yes, that's right. A swift death penalty might prevent Mr. Terrell from concluding that highway to hell. Perhaps. Oh, there's a good chance. Now let's move to the politics file, because let's face it, justice and domestic tranquility can get you down. So let's go to politics, where all we have to worry about is money instead of lives. Pennsylvania is one of the states teetering on the edge of bankruptcy, as you know, as are so many states. But Pennsylvania has decided, the legislators there, in their wisdom, have decided to borrow about $600 million to pay for some important projects. That's right. Governor Ed Rendell is earmarking $10 million of borrowed money for the Arlen Specter Library at Philadelphia University. Yeah, the Arlen Specter Library. Well, they'll have a special section there for the founder of Earth Day, and they'll have a mock-up of the trunk that he locked his girlfriend's body in after he killed her.
Ew.
I can't remember that fella's name off the top of my head, the founder of Earth Day. Anyway, it was Arlen Specter that got him off after he killed that girl and then became an environmentalist. So $10 million of borrowed money for the Arlen Specter Library and another $10 million for the John P. Murtha Center for Public Policy at the University of Pittsburgh at Johnstown. That's right. Rendell, of course, is defending the projects. He says, quote, "Capital money can be spent to make investments that create jobs, that create orders for U.S. steel, American lumber and concrete, all of the manufacturing that is important to keeping our economy humming. It's one of the ways that we've done so well over the years compared to other industrial states," unquote. That's Ed Rendell, the governor of a free state in America, if you can believe that, circa 2010. Where have we come to? Not only do the criminals have us surrounded, but if you look up, the politicians, who are equally as dangerous in the grand scheme of things, they've got us surrounded too. I'm surrounded by idiots, as one bright man once said. And so are you there in the audience of the Weekly Worldview. We're surrounded by idiots. Anyway, he's Ed Rendell. Someone might want to let Ed Rendell know that there's no such thing as American steel or lumber or concrete, as far as I know. Is there? Certainly not in Pennsylvania. I don't know. Borrowing money to create jobs, I can understand that if you're starting up a business, take out a loan. You know, you're hoping your business will return 50 to 1 on your money. That's the way to borrow money to create jobs. But for a government agency that doesn't really produce any wealth, to borrow money to create jobs, well, it's idiotic. Need I say more? Let's move on. The Gulf oil spill. I have not talked about this story in a while because, frankly, I can't think about it without wanting to vomit because it's all I hear about. I mean, the folks at CNN have pretty much thrown in their entire hope for any ratings on the Gulf oil spill. It's funny to watch. But you know that early on, I said that the ecosystem is so powerful and resilient that with just the basic effort, just some effort to clean this up and stop it, we could prevent any serious damage. Well, here we are 80-some-odd days later, and I know I've prayed and I've thanked the Lord for the ecosystem that he gave us and the resiliency, and I would have to say he's looking down and saying, well, yeah, but you got to do something. I mean, you got to do something about it. So anyway, but what's surprising to me is 80-some-odd days later that the damage isn't as catastrophic as I would have thought it would be. But let's go to the story from ABC News. Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal supports a plan to build artificial islands made of tons of rocks and boulders, which he says would slow the flow of oil into a Louisiana bay. But federal officials have refused the state the necessary permission to build, and that has triggered an increasingly heated political confrontation between the governor there, Bobby Jindal, and the federal authorities. Governor Jindal says, you know, the government has basically, he said, I want to build these, they've said no. And Jindal says, quote, no is not a plan, unquote. That's what he said at a press conference last week. That's a pretty darn good line. I like Bobby Jindal. I like him all right. Now, federal officials, according to this ABC News story, are furious with Bobby Jindal because they feel like he's playing politics and trying to make them look bad because they're not doing anything as his beaches and estuaries and bays are being infiltrated by this oil that we've been warned about. It's not like we didn't know it was coming, Bobby says, you know. But here's the story here from ABC. Federal officials say that they're baffled by Bobby Jindal's plan to build barrier reefs to block the oil. They're baffled. And ABC says it's not just federal officials that are opposed to Jindal's rock jetty proposal. Now, this is where it gets interesting from a media perspective. ABC reports with a straight face, claiming to be journalists. They report in their story, multiple government agencies have weighed in on opposing Jindal's plan, but now an army of scientists has also come forward to express their concerns. The scientists, according to ABC, worry that the rock plan could do more harm than good, dot, 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 hamina, hamina, yada, yada, yada. They don't name the army of scientists. I read the whole article, I clicked all the links, they don't even name one scientist. And if you have an army of scientists, you would think you could get a quote from at least one as to why it is Bobby Jindal's plan is so insane, it could destroy the Gulf. I mean, if that's true, I want to know. Couldn't we get one scientist to come on the record and say, here, I've got a PhD in, well, whatever you need a PhD in to figure this kind of stuff out. And here's my opinion. Bobby Jindal doesn't know what he's talking about. If you put these rocks in, here's what's going to happen. Not a single scientist is named here. And they've got an army of them, according to ABC, an army. How come they can't find one who'll actually say, my name is Joe Smith, PhD, and Bobby Jindal's an idiot? So multiple government agencies, none of those are named, and an army of scientists think Bobby Jindal's crazy, but ABC can't seem to get one of them to quote. I think ABC's making it up, frankly. I think ABC is carrying water for the embarrassed and embattled Obama administration against Bobby Jindal. That's what I think is going on, and I'm willing to accuse ABC of it right here, right to their face. But they don't take my calls, nor do they return my calls. All right. Now let's move on into the politics file even deeper. This is from London, the Reuters wire. An investigation into the British Climate Research Unit has cleared its scientists of serious wrongdoing, but criticized their lack of openness and said some of their data was misleading. So whose investigation was it, you ask? Well, we'll get to that. The investigation was done by the University of East Anglia. in eastern England. So it's basically the climate research unit is investigating itself. And they've miraculously been cleared of any misconduct or wrongdoing. Yes, the University of East Anglia says that there's no evidence to undermine the case for man-made global warming. That's right. There's lack of openness, and they're a little misleading, but there's no evidence to undermine the overwhelming case for anthropogenic global warming. Uh-huh. Yeah, the investigation was led by former civil servant Muir Russell. Now, if I'm Muir Russell, do I want to be introduced as a former civil servant? That just seems, I don't know. Maybe he didn't have any editorial control, but I would have preferred Reuters not introduce me as a former civil servant. But anyway, Muir Russell and the folks over at the University of East Anglia said the emails contain nothing to overturn the case for man-made global warming. That's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. An investigation. Well, now it's clear. This is the third investigation, by the way, by the ICC investigated itself. The CRU investigated itself. And then now the University of East Anglia. So you've got three witnesses who all were involved in the cover-up who have all said that each other, well, he didn't do anything wrong. And the one said the other didn't. And now they've got their story straight. Let's put it that way. That's right. All right, let's move on. Do I have more from the? I think I might have more on the CRU and the climate toward the end of the show. But let's go deeper into the politics file. Have you heard about the possibility that the Democrats here in the United States of America could lose the House in the fall? Well, it's a possibility, right? And they could lose the Senate. It's a possibility. Because they've gone so hog-wild socialist mad that even the moderates, which are the weak, jelly-spined pukes out there who call themselves moderates. You know, a friend of mine on Facebook, I can't remember who it is, but I'm looking at people I haven't seen in years, and I open their profile to see what their politics and religion, you know. And so under his politics tab, he had just vote, smiley face. Just vote. Well, I'm sure the Nazi party would have appreciated a philosophy. Hey, just vote, you know. If they're marching by and goose-stepping, you know, if it's that's what you want to do, you know, just jump right in there. Just vote, smiley face. So anyway, that was because moderates are pukes and jelly spined, and they make me sick. On a global level. I'm not saying I couldn't sit down and have a cup of coffee with the guy. Have a genteel conversation. I'm just saying that a philosophical level makes me want to lose my lunch. Preferably on that person, if at all possible. All right, now the Democrats, a National Journal reporter, Charlie Cook, who is a political handicapper, according to the Wall Street Journal, predicted last month that the House is gone, saying the GOP is going to take over. He thinks Democrats will hold the Senate, but with a significantly reduced majority. So, the Democrats have recessed and left town without passing any major legislation. And there's no sign, you know, there hasn't been any sign, according to the Wall Street Journal in recent weeks, that party leaders are planning an ambitious lame duck session to muscle through bills in December that they don't want to defend before November. So, there hasn't been any signs of it, but all of a sudden it's come up. The idea that the Democrats, after being defeated, soundly trounced, bounced out of office by the Tea Partiers with our pitchforks and torches, figuratively at the ballot box, after being bounced out of office, do you think they would return in December to pass cap and trade, card check, immigration reform, the legalization of the murder of certain classes of people? Do you think they'd have the audacity to do that? Oh, wait a second. Well, I think they would do card check. I think they would do cap and trade. I think they would do immigration reform in a lame duck session. I think they will do it if they're defeated. But as far as the legalization of the murder of certain classes of people, they've already done that. That's right. They already did that. Well, actually, it wasn't the legislature that did it. It was... it's foggy to me as to how it happened. But let me get back to moral capital. Why can't we all agree that murderers deserve the death penalty? That kidnapping is a death penalty offense? That adultery is a crime? Why can we not all... Why can our leaders in the government not see that clearly? And it's because in a post-Christian America, our political leaders and our church leaders and our family leaders have squandered the moral capital that they were endowed with by their Creator and our forefathers. And they no longer have the moral certitude to pursue justice. We've lost it. And whenever that happens in a culture, ladies and gentlemen, the barbarians are at the gates. They're waiting there to fill the void where the moral capital has been squandered. And I'll tell you, they've got us surrounded, folks. All right. Now, some good news. Cue up a happy song. Yeah, happy song, because I've got some good news, okay? Good news to go to break on. Something happy. This is incredible. For those of you who buy into the idea that life and the universe evolved by chance and that we're just a glob of cellular material, carbon-based, that somehow fashioned itself through unguided means into some level of intelligence, and you've bought into that, you're simply closing your eyes to reality. Listen to this from the Daily Mail in London. A miniature telescope that is implanted in the eye to solve sight problems has been approved for use in the United States. The new device is for people with an irreversible advanced form of macular degeneration in which a blind spot develops in the central vision of both eyes. The telescope, this tiny telescope, replaces the eye's natural lens and can provide an image that is magnified by almost 3 times. The device then magnifies and projects the image onto a healthy portion of the retina. This is incredible. Now, if you were to stumble across a fella who had this implanted in his eye, would you assume that it just grew there by chance? Or might you think possibly that there was some intelligent designer who was alive, who was relational, who actually cared about the plight of the blind and worked to create this magnificent device? What would you think if you stumbled across it? I mean, the way you answer that question determines whether you're with us or you're with the barbarians who've got us surrounded. I'm Doug McBurney. We are rounding third and headed for home. So glad to have you aboard. but I've got more than I can possibly pack into the last few minutes. So you're just going to have to, grab a hold and try to hang on through the rest of the ride. This is from the Culture File, the Reuters Wire. American doctors report in the Annals of Internal Medicine that the rate of sexually transmitted diseases... formerly known as venereal diseases. That's right. The rate of venereal diseases in older men taking drugs like Viagra is twice as high as in their non-medicated peers.
No.
Shock of all shocks. Now, in both groups, however, the number of venereal diseases are increasing up almost 50% since 1996. a 50% increase in both the geezers and the young punks. So scientists were wondering, could it be that the introduction of Viagra in 1998 has led to this massive increase in venereal diseases? Well, to test whether the introduction of Viagra might explain some of the surge, scientists examined insurance records for more than over a million U.S. men who are over 40. The most commonly found venereal disease was HIV. Is there anything more disgusting than trying to contemplate an increase in old queers on Viagra? I mean, that's just one of the most disgusting visuals that ever entered my mind. But I read the story, and, you know, what, you put two and two together. Talk about wanting to lose your lunch. Anyway, the risk of contracting a venereal disease turned out to be more than twice as high in men taking Viagra and Viagra-like drugs compared with those who didn't. So anyway, I feel like I need a shower after that story. All right. Well, I apologize for that. From the Associated Press, Atlanta, Georgia, a federal judge has ruled in favor of a former Georgia State legislative aide who claims she was fired after telling her boss she would be coming to work dressed as a woman as she transitioned from a man to a woman. So you know what bothered me about this paragraph or sentence was that it starts out, by the end of the sentence, you're not sure what sex the person was, because it starts out saying she was fired when she told her boss she was transitioning from a man to a woman. So what did she start out as, is what I'm wondering. And that's what happens, folks. It's all very confusing. U.S. District Judge Richard Story ruled last Friday that Vandy Beth Glenn's firing violated her constitutional rights under the Equal Protection Clause. Glenn is a transgendered woman formerly known as Glenn Morrison. Glenn? Oh, now she's Vandy Beth Glenn. Okay. She claimed she was fired from her job as a legislative editor because the gender transition would make her colleagues feel uncomfortable. And would be seen as immoral by some people. Imagine that. Imagine being seen as immoral. Unbelievable.
Does this person take Viagra?
As far as we know, she's not on Viagra. But wait a minute, did she start out as a boy? Seems like at one point she was a man. Now, she may have started as a woman, gone to a man, and now is coming back. It's hard to say. And possibly it could have taken Viagra at some point. But that's not covered in the story, and we don't really want to think about that, do we? Let's go on now from the government school file in the culture, from the government school subfile of the culture file. From Detroit, Michigan, the former president of the Detroit School Board appeared in court last Tuesday to face charges that he, well, I can't say what he did. Frankly, I can't say what he did, but he did it in front of the district's female superintendent. So you have to draw your own conclusion because I can't. Anyway, Otis Mathis, 55-year-old former president of the Detroit School Board, was released on $50,000 bond and ordered not to have contact with children at any school. Yeah. Because he, well, Mathis is a former substitute teacher in Detroit. He was elected to the school board back in 08. He ran into problems earlier this year, according to the AP, when several emails he had written were published showing that he had difficulty writing complete and coherent sentences. This is the president of the Detroit School Board. So not only is he a pervert, he's also a moron. And that's a pretty reasonable example of the quality of human being produced in America's government schools. I think he's a perfect example of what we get. Mathis has admitted to having a learning disability, which doesn't explain why he did what he did in front of the female superintendent or why they're got a no contact with children order. Anyway, that's from the government school files. And if that didn't make you feel bad enough, from Wayne County, Michigan, prosecutor Kim Worthy says that a lack of making parents accountable for their children is partly to blame for elevated truancy and dropout rates, as well as a recent rash of violent crimes involving teens. Yes, prosecutor Kim says that we're not making parents accountable for their kids, and that's why we have all these problems. Violent crime, truancy, dropout rates. Well, Kim has a new idea she hopes will fix the problem. She says we should throw parents in jail for up to 3 days if they repeatedly miss PTA conferences. I'm not making this up. She says if you repeatedly miss parent-teacher conferences at your child's government school, you will be thrown in jail. That's Prosecutor Kim's solution. She says, I know we need to try something different. We should not have to legislate this, but what we have been doing is not working. And I have to agree with Prosecutor Kim there. What we have been doing is not working. Yes. Basically taking children away from their parents. In fact, bamboozling parents into believing that they have to turn their children over to a godless government education system that teaches kids they evolved from slime and that their main ambition in life should be to have sex with each other. Randomly and as often as possible. That's not working, Kim. But I don't think jailing the parents is a reasonable solution. So, Prosecutor Kim and I part ways there. But at least there's some agreement, and doesn't that make everybody feel better? I feel like a good person. All right. Okay, from the personhood file. An infant was found stuck in an airliner toilet after the plane landed in Amritsar, northern India. Yeah. The baby was rushed to the hospital, still attached to the toilet bowl. Doctors at the hospital said that a team of surgeons used a saw cutter to remove the newborn's head from the toilet. The 22-year-old mother apparently tried to flush the newborn baby down the toilet on an airplane. She was arrested at the airport. The doctors at the hospital said that at last report, the infant was in critical condition. No further... By the way, this story is from the 8th. I'm sorry, from the 7th. What is today? The 11th? Anyway, so I looked for further information on how is the child doing. Nothing. No further information. And I believe that's because the media honestly doesn't care how the child is doing. Either that or it doesn't want to focus attention on the fate of this person who was brutally, viciously attacked by his mother. The media doesn't want us to think about that, you see. And they really don't care how the kid's doing. And they probably don't understand that there are people who read the story a few days ago who want to know if the baby survived. They don't understand. That doesn't even register with them that anyone would care. The main focus of the story to the media is this 22-year-old mother from Turkmenistan. She's an unmarried medical student returning home after completing a degree abroad.
Sounds just like regular
American. Yeah. Sounds like a modern, liberated woman. Well, the media, the reporters, I shouldn't use the term the media. When I say that, I mean the reporters, graduates of modern journalism schools, people who hold degrees in journalism and purport to be journalists. Journalists don't care about the baby. They don't want to update us on how. They don't want us to think about the baby. The only thing they want us to think about is, if only abortion were legal in Turkmenistan or India or wherever this woman's from. If only it was legal there, this tragedy might have been avoided. Or if only this woman, this poor, uneducated woman, had the means to determine her own biological destiny. Well, it turns out, she's a medical student, so she's not just an ignorant slob. She's not some poor woman who's been held down with the boot of the man on her throat, not allowed to educate herself. She's a medical student, completed a degree. And by the way, abortion is legal, both in Turkmenistan and in India. So that's why this tragedy, so-called, occurred. It's because this woman has, like so many women around the world, and men, been raised in a culture in which throwing babies in the garbage is common practice. Common practice. It's done millions of times a year. throughout the West and the East and well, everywhere else that's post-Christian. Let's see. So the only way to remedy that is to change the law so that everyone is protected as a legal person. And if you want to do that, you can go check out the website at personhoodusa.com. And if you want to help in Colorado, we've actually put it on the ballot here in Colorado. We're going to vote on it in November. And we're all working via our web portal, mycampaigntracker.org. You should check that out if you haven't checked it out yet. Mycampaigntracker.org. The way we're going to organize the ordinary folks into, well, we'll see what happens. I think we're going to do pretty well. All right. Mycampaigntracker.org, personhoodusa.com. Write those down. Check those out. All right. Now, let's move through the culture file from Los Angeles County. Now, this is just bizarre. The Los Angeles Student Council, also known as city council officials, the student council voted last Tuesday to form a task force to examine safety hazards at rave parties. You just can't make this stuff up. Now, you'll remember last month there was an event that led to the drug-related death of a teenage girl. Shock of all shocks, a rave party producing a drug-related death. So now, what does the student council in L.A. want to do? They want to set up a commission to study how we can make rave parties safer. Yeah, Sasha Rodriguez collapsed at a rave party and died after being treated for drug intoxication. So, naturally, the student council there in L.A., they know what to do. They're going to instruct the County Department of Public Health to convene a team of city officials, police representatives, hospital staff, and others, including the people who promote rave parties, to develop recommendations for making raves safer and publicizing their dangers. So this is just, I can't even relate to the mentality here. They want to publicize the dangers of rave parties, which basically is free advertising for rave parties. Because when young teenage kids who are indestructible hear that there's a party and it's happening, there's drugs, it's dangerous, all they want to know is when and where. So the student council there in Los Angeles is going to help the promoters promote their parties, and they're going to try to make them safer. One of their ideas is to require rave organizers to have medical staff on site. Well, look, if you're going to give the kids that much MDMA,
I think it might be smart to have a nurse on there. By the way, as we study these parties, should we have the opportunity to attend, I think. Indeed. I think the only way to understand what's happening at these parties is to attend a few of them and take assiduous notes and then convene and have a meeting in which we'll all take our own fair share of ecstasy and experience what the children are experiencing so that we can relate to their mental state, mindset, and we can create the rules and regulations that will make rave parties in Los Angeles County much safer. Los Angeles County Public Health Director Jonathan Fieldberg, that's the gentleman I think who was just talking, his department will be overseeing the task force. He stressed the importance of educating families about the prevalence of drugs like ecstasy at rave parties. Educating families, yeah. You know, that the liberals always seem to think that education is the key. You know, if you teach kids about all the various drugs that are available at rave parties and involve their mother and father so that they all come in and see, here's all the drugs that your kid might be taking at the rave party, they seem to think that that'll solve the problem. We could solve the problem very quickly. Number one, say you're not allowed to take drugs at a rave party. I don't care if you want to stay up and dance all night to horrible techno music. I got no problem with that. But if there are any drugs, you'll be executed. You say that to the rave organizer and everyone at the rave. You can't have drugs at a rave party. You know, I have a theory on drug prevention. If you're caught with drugs, you should be forced to consume all of those drugs immediately. And if you die, well, you got what was coming to you. So the guy who goes into the rave party with 1,100 tabs of ecstasy, I mean, his career is over.
And then you've prevented, how many lives have you saved?
That's
my theory of drug control. Because people say, well, should you execute dealers? How should you punish users? I just, you know, I've got one solution for the whole problem. All right, now let's move on. I got one more quote. I can't let Jonathan Fieldberg, who will be overseeing the rave party study that will be taking place. What should we wear to the parties? What do the children wear? I have to look into that. Certainly want to be dressed appropriately. We wouldn't want to stand out, you know.
Baggy pants.
Want to experience where it has to wear baggy pants? Is that right? Wear baggy pants? All right. He says, I don't know why a parent would let their underage child go to one of these rave parties. Yeah. He doesn't understand. Well, it's because you and the Los Angeles County government and the state government and the federal government have convinced parents that they have to turn their kids over into a culture that separates them from their parents. And so that there's the famous generation gap. Well, that's been created by people like you, Mr. Jonathan Fielding, and the state and the federal and the local county governments, who've all decided that we'll set up an education system that tears children away from their parents and causes children to rely on each other for guidance in some of the big questions in life, such as whether to go to a rave party and take ecstasy or not. Mom and Dad generally aren't involved in those decisions, Mr. Fielding, because you've removed them from the equation. Of course, they have been removed willingly because, well, they went to public schools themselves, and so they're handicapped. Let's go here. Dateline San Francisco. A study by the nonpartisan RAND Drug Policy Research Center predicts that retail prices for high-grade marijuana could drop from $375 an ounce to as little as $40 an ounce if voters approve a ballot initiative authorizing counties to license and tax commercial pot sales to adults. That's right. I can't even do the math on that, but that's like going from very expensive to very cheap. Jonathan Calkins, Carnegie Mellon University, says when the purchase price goes way down, that cuts down on retail tax revenue, which was one-third of the billion-dollar estimate that the Californians were bamboozled with when they were talked into voting on legalizing and taxing marijuana. So they were promised all this tax revenue, but he says, wait a minute, the price is going to drop by 100%. What is that, 1,000%? I can't even figure it out. He says, what could adversely affect the excise tax is the gray market that would be created by tax evaders. So the Californians were told, we can solve your budget problem, legalize and tax marijuana, but now the reality settles in that the price will drop, tax revenue through the floor, and also, who's going to want to pay the taxes? I mean, these are dope dealers, for crying out loud. Anyway, and by the way, do you think that the dope dealers, the mean ones with the machine guns, are going to let this happen, the price of their commodity drop from $400 to $40? Do you think they're going to let that happen without killing some hippies? It's just scary. Yes, one final thing from the Climate Research Unit. Final note, you know they've been cleared. The Climate Research Unit was cleared by the ICC, who was subsequently cleared by East Anglia University, and they've all been cleared by Al Gore. By the way, the only thing I find interesting about that Al Gore story is this whole idea that he needed to release his second chakra. I mean, Al Gore is a genuine pagan. I mean, he's fully sold out pagan. Unbelievable. Second chakra. Anyway, finally, from the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change, this in from the New York Times, the officials there at the IPCC have urged their participating researchers to, quote, keep a distance from the media, unquote, and send any press questions about their work to supervisors. That's right. Don't answer the pesky questions of the media yourself, Mr. Young Scientist. Send it to your superiors. It's like Scientology. Somebody comes to interview you, please don't answer any of their questions. Just send them up the hall to the more enlightened one. Anyway, that's it. That's it for the Weekly Worldview. I will be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV Radio, KGov Online, American Right to Life, Personhood USA. Check them out at personhoodusa.com. Check out mycampaigntracker.com if you're in Colorado. .org.com, doesn't matter. Yeah, we got them all covered. Check all those out. And until I talk to you again next week, may the grace of God go with you and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.